Do I always have to go first? Hello, Kathy.
Well, yeah, it's like you're the brains of the operation. I'm just the comic relief. What you're going to talk about. I just come in here and shoot the breeze.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you, Bobby?
I'm good. And welcome to The Upside of Down.
We're feeling pretty up these days, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun doing these podcasts because, you know, there is the upside of down. It is worth knowing and thinking about that, you know, there are things you can control in this world.
It really is interesting and fascinating, and I find that the more I learn about it, the more I can put some things into action. But I don't think you want to let me loose on the medical community just yet.
It takes a lot to become a behavior analyst.
I'm just working on not crossing my arms all the time when I'm talking with you, or you think that I'm exhibiting some kind of behavior.
No. My psyche cannot afford to spend my time doing analysis.
You'd go crazy.
I know. You'd just go nuts, right?
Yeah.
You've got to have.
And we don't mean nuts or being crazy is a bad thing. That's a perfectly okay thing.
Right. We're not pathologizing nuts or crazy.
No, we would never do that.
We're using them more as adjectives for
the way we are.
Not always fun to do things certain way.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, it's true. I need relaxed social time. I can't spend
It'll be a
time.
Busman's holiday, as they like to say.
Whatever.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I really enjoy behavior, and I enjoy talking about behavior, and I find it fascinating. And as I edit these podcasts and we create more of them, I realize it's a complex little subject, right?
You said it.
And you
understand it. Imagine being me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's helpful for everybody to understand it because honestly, it is the way of the future. Most therapeutic responses become more and more and more aligned with behavioral science than any other science.
Really?
Absolutely. And even the other sciences, like cognitive science and neuroscience and genetic science and medical science, are coming to the place where there's an understanding that that there's a whole environmental aspect to everything, and that we cannot isolate a single organism and say all of the problems and impairments are within this organism. What we need to understand is that the organism interacts with its environment, and any symptomatology that we see in that organism, there is a component of it.
Is this nature versus nurture thing?
That is environmental. Yeah, so we haven't said what we're talking about yet.
No, we haven't. I'm already confused.
And it is, and it's absolutely that nature versus nurture argument, which really was a silly argument to begin with, but now becomes all the more silly with the science that we have around it. So our adage or proverb today is one that you apparently, I think you said it in an earlier podcast.
Okay.
Much earlier on. And it's that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Oh, I think I did mention it.
Yes, you did.
Sometimes it's used as a compliment, and sometimes it's used as a negative, right?
Because like everything in behavior, it's on a spectrum.
There you go. Right.
And that's true. And I think when we talked about it last time, we were talking more about the influences of learning history on behavior and the functions of behavior and how we understand and analyze behavior. I know when we did that, I felt at the time that we needed another podcast to talk more specifically about what are all those influences that create this perfectly individual organism of a human being that's not like any other human being.
Right? And even two kids growing up in the same household seem completely different, but they were raised by the same parents and
the same genes.
They went on the same vacation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, identical twins are not the same people, right? They don't create, they don't grow or develop to become clones of the other.
No.
And, you know, and there's so many studies where they use twin studies because it's such a good control for all the variables of learning history, of genetics, of all of that. And still, the development creates two distinct individuals. So I wanted to talk further about that. And about, yes, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but the tree may be a whole lot more complex than we assume. We all see the tree as being the parent or the family system. And I think the family system and the parent may be the trunk of the tree, but there's also the roots.
Sure.
And the branches and the leaves, which are taking in nurturing, and the environment, which supports the tree even being alive, right?
And the insecticides that poison the tree.
Absolutely. And the diseases that come and get the tree, and the horrible things that people hang on trees.
Oh, God.
Oh, let's not go there. Holy cow. And sometimes beautiful things to hang on trees. Anyway, it's a great adage, but to just say a person becomes who they are because of their genetics, or because of what their parents did, or because of their IQ, what their IQ is, or how their brain is developed, what their diagnoses are. I mean, it's too simplistic to say that, because we know that that individual has been created by all of those things.
It's a big soup.
Yeah, it is. So when we talk about it behaviorally, we talk about that in terms of interbehavioral learning. We've had a few behavioral scientists who have talked about interbehavioral understanding. And when we do analysis of behavior, how it is, we have to take in those interbehavioral influences. And interbehavioral means pretty much all the things that we talked about on that tree.
Okay.
And more, probably, than they even understood when they came up with that term, right? But one that I think behavior analysts would be well to familiarize themselves with. I think it's a mistake for us to ever try to do an analysis simplistically. Especially with adults, it's not possible. With children, it's a little easier, right? But not with an adult. With an adult, there's no simple understanding. It is more complex. Of those interbehavioral issues, we have intergenerational behavior conditioning, which is very interesting. So we found that behavioral conditioning will go over generations, right? And that if you had a great-grandfather who died from a snake bite, you're probably going to have a greater incidence of phobia to snakes.
Oh, come on.
In your family line. No, that's true. And they even have some studies that show that.
That's so odd. But no.
Not necessarily.
I'm thinking of bees. When whole families are all afraid of bees.
Yeah.
So if your mom's afraid of bees, then I guess you get afraid of bees. And if your mom isn't afraid of bees.
Right. So
snakes. If your dad's afraid of snakes, he's got this decision about snakes that you pick up on. Oh, okay, I can see it.
Right? And and in our last podcast, we talked about how you send all these messages along physically and in through your nervous system. And
no idea that you're sending them out there.
Absolutely. And so, you know, these are conditioned behaviors. You know, you have the demeanor your mother had, right?
Yes.
Or your movements are very much very reminiscent of someone in your family.
Oh, I love that when you can see like somebody doing a facial expression that you recognize from your grandmother or
Absolutely.
Something. Or you see your cousins and they just do something that reminds you of your dad. I love that when that happens.
Yes. Well, we would tell you that's all intergenerational conditioned behaviors. And we have more evidence of that all the time because the study of genetics has come to understand that the nature part, what we used to think was hardwired in us, isn't hardwired at all. that those genes are more like switches.
Oh my gosh.
And they're more like dimmer switches, not just a on-off switch, although there is the on-off part too. But sometimes they can be partially activated. So genes, and that they change over our lifespans. We'll have a sort of predisposed gene that is switched on when we're younger, that over our lifespans, as our behavior changes and our personal growth changes, we switch it off.
Huh.
We actually can do that. And there are
unbeknownst to us, though.
Unbeknownst to us. And there are even studies of simpler organisms that human beings, like plants or animals, where that can be done in a matter of hours.
Wow.
Changing a gene.
It's like a circuit board.
Right, like a circuit board. And the switching that occurs with those. So it's fascinating,
yeah.
but that also gives evidence to the fact that, okay, it's still important for us to know what you have in your history. You know, if you have a mental health disability, did other people in your family have it?
Mind you, back in the day, nobody talked about that kind of stuff. I mean, talking about depression is relatively new.
Yeah.
Right? You used to not, so you might not, you might have known that, you know, your grandpa was an alcoholic or something, but
or
you wouldn't necessarily know that your great-grandfather was depressed.
Suicide would be the indicator we might use. That
yeah, you might
want
to talk about that either.
Yeah. No, I know. But there is always that investigation
sure.
of that. And we do it with medical science, too.
For sure.
You always want to know, what happened.
What did your mother die?
Right?
What did your father die?
Okay, so now we know that there's a strong component of conditioned behavior. But what's nice is the whole nature-nurture argument sort of closed off to us the idea that change was possible if it was in your genes.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So your mother had schizophrenia or psychosis of some sort, then there was always this scary, scary thing that, you know, that was just going to happen to me.
Yes.
And that it could just happen to me. But it's more hopeful to see us as organisms who are responding to our environments with what we know. And what we know is what we've learned through all these different things, right?
Well, I like the idea of a hopeful podcast, Bobby. That's nice.
Well, the upside of down, Kathy.
There we go.
Absolutely. There's always possibility.
Okay, so then when you're collecting your data and you're finding out about like a particular behavior, you will also, that's when you're going to start to investigate the environment in which this person grew up in, functions in now,
right?
Or all that
and
kind of
critical
stuff.
Incidents in a person's life. What were some of the more defining things? Because sometimes something will happen when somebody is right in a developmental stage where there's key learning that has to take place, and that critical incident will affect them in an extremely powerful way that will change the nature of how they develop from there on in. Like that can be, it can be
so
huge.
Like if you lose a parent when you're still a young child, that
it'll make a difference in the person you become. If you know, if there's been if you've had an illness, you know, I run into a lot of adults who I do analyses of, people with what we call a disordered personality. The medical model, when it was in its developing stages, still in its developing stages, they were more focused on expertise than they were focused on humanistic treatment of the patient,
mm-hmm.
right? The patient became an object.
Right. Yeah, skilled
to be
acted
upon by an expert, and you unquestioningly subjected yourself to that treatment,
right?
Whatever it was. You know, people are rebelling against that all over the place now, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to self-advocate in those situations. There's no expert on you other than you. We weren't very good at dealing with children in illness during those times. So I will often again, often is not good quantifying, but I would say perhaps at least 10% of the analyses that I do, particularly of people with a disordered personality being queried or being questioned, will have had a prolonged illness in childhood where they were hospitalized for a long time. Another thing we don't do anymore, and we're not necessarily the processing around being in hospital and being sick and how you can be okay in that situation wasn't done. If there was a mother with a bunch of children home, that child would have been left in hospital for a prolonged period of time with very little nurturing.
Sure.
You know, the nurse who cared, for sure, very often they're very busy people, in and out, right? And the hospital wouldn't have necessarily understood the need to not traumatize the child with the loss of key support at a critical time. Even my own child, who was in the hospital for a week when she was young, I mean, it was a very difficult thing for her. And I worked to make sure that she wasn't traumatized, because she was only 4 and a half. And a week in hospital at that age can be traumatic. So we don't do that to children anymore. And I know, you know, hospitals work very hard now to ensure that parents have full access and that the children are talked to and nurtured through that. But I have seen a lot of people in psychiatry where that might have been a critical feature of how their personality developed into the future.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, these things occur, again, beyond people's control. It's never, nobody, I mean, some people, especially in psychiatric units, it was more direct behavior to traumatize them. But most people, it's some accident of fate,
oh
almost.
My gosh. Right.
So what's a really nice thing for us to do is to look at behavioral science and say, you know, let's limit the accidents of fate. Because truth of the matter is, we have a whole lot of science that tells us fate doesn't have to occur if we have a good understanding. Now, I know a lot of parents worry about what we don't understand.
Right? Yeah.
What don't I understand about what my child needs in the moment? And I think we've talked about this many times before. Don't worry, parents. Love your child. Do your best. Teaching is your job. And your child will be fine. Fate's a good thing. Accidents of fate teach resilience.
Yep.
But be aware of how your child is managing any given situation. Don't try to protect them. Don't try to prevent them from living a life.
Right.
On the other hand, allow them to go through things with some facilitated support or nurturing to get them to the next stage of what their development. So this is how the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. The other one is the cognitive scientists. And I know I in the last podcast I mentioned Alvin Noe.
Yes.
And his coming to an understanding that we become a part of our environment. And our understanding of the human soul is that's where it is. And I know that sounds like New Age religion. Maybe it is. I know that any time I have felt my spiritual being, mm-hmm. and any time I have observed that in other religions, that's what it tends to be.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Me too.
Yeah. I mean, it tends to be that understanding that we are part of a whole.
Yes.
Something greater than ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? Well, you know, we can have that. You know, the idea that our IQ can't change, we know that's not true. We know that IQ testing can be wildly unreliable if we don't accommodate for where the apple fell from.
That's right.
Or what kind of tree it belongs to, right?
Yeah.
Or the internal state of the person being evaluated or tested there. I mean, IQ is not a good understanding of human cognition. We know that people can have unbelievably good intelligence around certain things that would never show up on an IQ.
Yeah.
All those people with cognitive disabilities who are hypervigilant about others and caregivers in the internal states that that they're seeing in them, I mean, I think they should get some credit for that intelligence, because it's highly intelligent to read the internal state of another person.
Definitely.
And then adjust your behavior to cope somehow with it.
It's for them, it's like a survival technique, right?
Right. And, you know, and I've had people tell me, oh, this person can't learn, right? This person can't learn. That is something that is just simply not true. Any person who adapts to their environment from moment to moment, from day to day, week to week, is learning.
We're always learning.
What is learning? It's an adaptation,
yeah.
Right? It's adaptation. My brain is changing in this little piece here or this little piece there. I'm taking in something new and I'm putting it in to my repertoire one way or another, right? So yes, maybe I can't learn phone numbers, especially now that I have memory in all my devices. I don't have to, thank God, but I'm not good at learning phone numbers. So don't give me a string of numbers and tell me I have to remember it. Does that mean that my IQ might suffer from that? Does that mean that I'm not intelligent or that I can't learn? That, you know, we have to be really careful about that. So now it's now coming around to quantifying that requires a whole lot more than just an IQ test. There are lots and lots of tests we can use that help us. But then if we want a valid test too, and that means that we have to take into consideration who it is we're evaluating.
Sure.
And what kind of skills do they need for the life that they have to live, right? My bet is they're adapting those skills one way or another. So to tell people they can't learn, to tell people that their genetics or their parents determine whether they might suffer something, you know, a mental illness or even some diseases, it dead ends people.
I can see that. You're setting yourself up for a conclusion that may or may not happen.
Right.
And you're focusing, that would make you anxious for sure.
Yeah. So one of the things when I go in and I teach facility staff, I'm like, stop pathologizing people. You got yourself a diagnosis, that's great. What does that do? It gives you some more clues about this person and how they work. And that's an important thing to know, how to best interact with them, how to best act on their behalf.
Yes.
That's great. But that's it. That's all you know. You know a little piece of the puzzle. But if you say that that's all there is to them, is that diagnosis, well, you've dead-ended them. That's it. Boom. Their lives don't matter. When we say that these things are predetermined or unchangeable in a human organism, then we absolutely dead end them. And we create a situation that is untenable for so many people in our population. So, you know, I worry very much about the epidemic of mental health and the lack of understanding around these issues. And some of it, you know, some of it has been marketed to sell us psychotropic drugs,
yeah.
Right? Some of it is marketed, but there's absolutely no science around a chemical imbalance in the brain for creating a mental health disorder. So even psychiatry will say now, there's no science to support that. But it was something that was believed for a long time, and it marketed well, it marketed drugs well.
Mm-hmm.
If you want more information about that, there's a great website called Mad in America.
Mad in America?
Mad in America. M-A-D in America. Anyway, we need to be clear that when we put someone, when we box someone in, when we label them, when we stigmatize them, when we say you are in an unchangeable position, we've taken away their raison d'etre. Right? And there's no personal power in that. And if a person has no personal power left, well, then what do they have?
Yeah.
I mean, nobody can live like that. we need treatments that take into consideration a broader understanding that this person needs to continue to develop, and they need to continue to develop as the individual that they are, and nobody else, and not someone else. We can't.
Well, and I guess we want to fix what got broken, or we want to make them into our image or what we think they should be. Accepting people the way they are is hard for us to do, though, because we just always want to.
I know.
Change,
and you know,
fix,
what we do
up.
To do, we need to climb their tree.
There you go.
We need to take a nap under that tree. We need to eat the apple, right? And we need to understand that there's no other apple like that one.
That's right. Yeah.
Even though it didn't fall from far from the tree, it didn't. It's there. It fell right underneath that tree. It still is the only apple there ever will be, just like that one. And there's all so many good reasons and so much good science that tell us that's okay. That apple has the ability to become itself and to do a really good job of becoming itself if we don't close those doors.
Yeah, I guess it's we have to be able to accept everybody's differences in an open way, but that's another podcast. Well, I've been hearing some ding ding dinging, like it's like Tinkerbell's coming to call, so I guess that maybe it means it's time for us to say goodbye until we come back and talk about another interesting and fascinating item of behavior analysis.
Absolutely.
Okay,
Kathy.
Bobby, thanks for everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
See you soon.
Bye.
Bye. What is that?